Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomé River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Hey, folks, we're right back, man. We've been having fun tonight. It's always so great we have people like Gene coming on because you can just put it on cruise control. Even if my computer crashes, he's more than capable to carry on the show. It's so relaxing to have somebody on like that. Everybody should have a co-host like Gene and Miss Monica. And guess what, people? We have a little treat. We called an audible today. We got Jim Rizzoli coming on. He's going to be with Gene most of the rest of the show. But we got a surprise guest. She tore through the barricades, overran some Northwest Canadian Mounted Police, and she's this wild and crazy Canadian woman. She's been up there torturing these poor Indians up there in Canada. But anyway, she's coming on to give us the latest scoop on what's going on with the Indian uprising up there in Canada. And her name is my little sister, Miss Braveheart, Monica Schaefer. How you doing tonight, Miss Braveheart?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Wow, what an introduction. I'm actually not doing too many attacks on the Indians, but I'll tell you what, there are so many stories right now, I don't even know where to begin. We are in a war, and of course, everybody knows the old saying about the first casualty in war is the truth. And so all the lies are being perpetrated against us, Of course, it's a war on against us, white people. And this will surprise you, but there's also a war on the Indians here, but they're using this leverage. They're lying to us about what's happened with all these, people who died and were put in unmarked graves. They're kind of making it sound almost like, you know, people were lined up and thrown into mass graves, which is nothing of the sort. And I'm telling you, this is a very, very complicated story, and you can be sure they are lying to us about what this is all about. And the timing of them bringing this out is not coincidental. They have known about graves at the old schools and just, you know, beside churches and whatnot for a long, long time. But the timing of bringing out these stories now is very much related to their bill, I think it's Bill C-15, about the UNDRIP. That's the United Nations Declaration for the Rights of Indigenous Peoples everywhere. And I'm telling you, this thing is meant to dispossess us of our land and basically, quote unquote, give it back to the natives. And they don't define native in it. It could be natives from anywhere in the world, really, like whatever that means, or indigenous peoples. They do not define indigenous peoples. And this bill seeks to give the land back to them. That's all of our land. I mean, but you know, I have many stories, but where do I start? First of all, they are doing weather warfare against us. They created this big heat dome, and it's like they actually have a word for it. I've seen this before. I haven't heard this word used for this current case, but it is applicable. They call it Ridiculous Resilient Ridge. Triple R, Ridiculous Resilient Ridge. They manufacture that with their chemtrailing and their HAARP energy weapons and whatnot. So they had this heat wave sit on top of our heads longer than ever, broke all kinds of records, so brought flooding. And then, of course, there's fires from lightning strikes and whatnot. But this little town of Lytton, BC, you may have heard about the fire that took 90% of it out, burnt 90% of it to the ground. Now, I have just been looking at a photograph, aerial photograph of it, and it looks highly suspicious to me, because if this is a forest fire because of the heat and lightning strikes and it comes through a town, wouldn't you think that the trees in the town would also burn? I see green trees dotted here and there between totally burnt down buildings. It did. That's surreal. It reminds me of the California fires. Was that last year? And that, I mean, I think that was pretty much a proven thing that there were energy weapons involved there. I don't know. I'm not saying I have the proof, but it looks mighty suspicious to me. Now, something else about that town, two other things actually. I believe the population is mostly native, so that might be a surprise that they would, if it was indeed targeted. But there was a doctor there who, a few months ago, he went public with his concerns about the effects that the so-called vaccination, I'll call it the rat poison injection, was having on many of his patients. And he was talking about this publicly. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of when, was it Malaysian airliners that suddenly dropped out of the sky after the Malaysian Prime Minister talked about 9/11 truth and what actually went on there a few years ago? Isn't that rather sort of a coincidental thing that suddenly these Malaysian airplanes dropped out of the sky? Well, this is interesting, too, that Lytton, it gets attacked, punished, I think. Again, I don't have proof, but you could look up the pictures of that town, and there are green trees beside, you know, streets and streets of burnt out houses. It's a tiny little village, but that's what's happened here. And with their weather warfare, and we watch this day to day, the chemtrailing across the skies, they're manipulating the weather. They've admitted, governments have admitted to using geoengineering, and of course they'll tell us it's all to save us from this, you know, climate change, which is also another big hoax. And of course they're talking about that now in relation to Lytton, because, you know, we're going to have more of these disasters if we don't all go to zero carbon, and yada yada yada, the whole story, right? It's just lie after lie after lie. But so with these Indian the graves that they've been finding, and they pulled this story out now. Now, first of all, I just want to say, look, any child that dies, that's a tragedy, and it's sad, and yes, there are some graves, but there it's a lot more complicated than that. For example, the Queen of England visited Kamloops in 1964 with Prince Philip, her husband, and 10 children, actually some people say it's 11, but for sure 10 children disappeared after they went on a picnic with the Queen and Prince Philip. They disappeared forever. And the Queen was found guilty in the International Common Law Court in Brussels after, I think, they went through that court for a year. But of course nobody has ever been able to arrest her. And the people who testified, they died. Well, you know, how does that happen? And anyone who ever tried to serve her was arrested and put in prison. And they never talk about those things in the mainstream media. And you'll just think, oh, Monica is just making stuff up. No, this is actually what happened. The Queen is part of this story. So, yeah, I mean, then let's talk about the Highway of Tears. That's this Highway 16, Prince George, going east and west. The Highway of Tears. So there's all these missing women that have gone missing from the Highway of Tears. Well, many of these women, if not all, I don't know, but many of these women were murdered by the RCMP themselves. We have a friend who witnessed one of these murders, Dana Braham. And, of course, his life, the witness, when he reported this, his life has been made absolute hell. There were attempts on his life. He's still alive, but his life has been absolute hell ever since. Lonnie Laundrude, he's the witness of this murder. Now, the murderer, Paul Collister, an RCMP who murdered Dana Braham, he then became chief of the investigation of the missing and murdered women. Isn't that convenient? It kind of reminds me of 9/11 again. You know, one of the chief architects of that becomes chief of the, or the head of the investigation of it, what was his name there? Geez, it just slipped my mind, but people will know that. And then another RCMP member, Bob Paulson, he had done the investigation of this place called Piggy Palace that's near Vancouver, east of Vancouver. And this is where a lot of these women were taken to, and there were all kinds of things that happened there, and then they were ground up and basically fed to the pigs. And the man who had that farm, Willie Picton, he became the fall guy for that. So he, you know, was just absolutely taken down in the media and whatnot, and, you know, was this evil guy. But Willie Picton was the fall guy, because this was a place where all kinds of you know, high-ranking chiefs of police and you know, judges and folks like that would go there, and they'd have their parties, and they'd do all kinds of things, be involved in all kinds of perverted, you know, raping and murders and whatnot. And then this would be on film, and they were told, okay, now, you know, this is on film, you do our bidding. So if you can imagine who's behind all that, the usual suspects. So very, very, very corrupt.
Miss Monica, that sounds like Bohemian Grove. That sounds like what goes on, used to go in the Bohemian Grove. Miss Monica, thank you so much for giving that update. We're going to bring just for Jim Rizzoli when we come back from this break, and Jim's going to and Gene are going to carry us out. Thank you so much, Miss Monica. I'll be in touch with you very soon. Anyway, people, hold on. We'll be right back with Gene and Jim, and they're going to carry on the rest of the show. Thank you so much for listening.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ has been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these. This means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. Monica's going to continue. She's going to finish up this snippet that we're going to bring Jim Rizzoli on. I'll read this one quick thing. She was talking about chemtrails and things like that. If you think you're going to laugh about that, get this. The Environmental Modification Convention, the ENMOD, formerly the Convention on the Prohibition of Military and or Other Hostile Use of and environmental modification techniques is an international treaty prohibiting the military or other hostile use of environmental modification techniques having widespread, long-lasting, or severe effects. It opened for signature on 18 May 1977 in Geneva. It was entered into force of law on 5 October 78. So there is a treaty preventing the use of the modification of environment. It exists, people. Ms. Malik, if you will, go back and tell us what you were talking about during the break and finish that up, if you will.
The man, the RCMP, who did the investigation on Piggy Palace, Bob Paulson, he went from corporal to commissioner. So he jumped the ranks. You know, the RCMP is sort of like a military organization, but it's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and they have their different ranks. Normally they would go one to the next until they would reach the top. But he jumped ranks. He was made commissioner after that investigation of Piggy Palace, this very, very corrupt place, which you compared to the Grove, Bohemian Grove?
Bohemian Grove.
And the first statement out of his mouth in a public, you know, the public statement with the media there when he became commissioner was, "I got your back, boys. I got your back, boys." So there you go. This is, of course, the public wouldn't have understood what that meant, but I got your back. In other words, we're going to cover for all these murders and crimes that we ourselves are doing. That's the double speak there. So I'll leave it at that, and I look forward to coming back on your show soon. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Ms. Much. Thank you so much, Ms. Monica. And that crime is global in scope, run by the same Antichrist spirit. Thank you so much, Ms. Monica. Just Mr. Jim Rizzoli, are you there, my good friend? Hey, Jim? Jim Rizzoli?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, I'm sorry. Hey, we called that on the fly. I apologize for taking up too much. We didn't take too much of your time. We were trying to get a listener called me today and wanted to know if we would get Miss Monica in because she lives in Western Canada where the Indians are on the uprising, et cetera, et cetera. So if you will, you know, we've had Gene on. I hope you were listening to the first hour of the show. If not, we'll get Gene to fill you in. I know you wanted to ask him some questions about the Civil War. And the last time you and I were on the radio together, we talked about the term total war, the concept of total war was kind of brought in by Sherman, General Sherman. And Gene knows more about that than I do, in the South from 1960 to 1865. And it's exported over to Europe in World War I, World War II, et cetera, et cetera. So go ahead, Jim. Introduce yourself to the audience, if you will. And you just ask Gene any questions you have. Make any comments you have. We're here for you, brother. And I want to thank you so much for coming on. So go ahead, Jim.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Jim Rizzoli here. I had some issues trying to log in here, but I finally got in. But I do have a question for Gene that is a question that I've always wondered why. Why do you think Lincoln was assassinated?
Okay, Jim, thank you very much. Glad you could be on the program. And there are several causes for that. Now, the sophomore U.S. history book says that John Wilkes Booth was just a crazy, and he was obsessed with the South losing the war and just took it out on Lincoln. And, you know, he's portrayed as some kind of just total nutcase. Now, he was an actor. He was maybe a little melodramatic, as most people in show business may be. But one of the reasons, and they never bring this up, but Booth actually said this, one of the reasons that he thought Lincoln needed to be taken out, first they were going to try to capture him and hold him hostage, and that didn't work. And then they decided, well, heck, we'll just kill him off and eliminate it. But one of the reasons he wanted Lincoln assassinated was because Lincoln had tried to kill our president, Jefferson Davis. He had an assassination attempt against Lincoln, and it was Dahlgren's raid on Richmond that started that. And Ulrich Dahlgren was a Union cavalry officer, and he was sent on a raid around Lee's Army of Northern Virginia. This cavalry raid swung west, cleared the Confederate lines, and came down to the James River west of Richmond. And they were going to cross the James River and come into Richmond from the south, which was virtually undefended because between Richmond and Petersburg, that was, you know, the only thing there. And there really wasn't any need to build fortifications there. The fortifications around Richmond were all out to the east, where the Seven Days Battle had been fought and Seven Pines and all of that. So they thought coming in from the south would be easy. And what happened was they got to the James River, and there had been a lot of rain up in the Shenandoah Valley, and the James River was running at flood stage, and they couldn't get across the ford there. And a runaway slave, a black gentleman, had showed them where this ford was across the James River, but it was running up out of the banks. And Dahlgren thought that this black fella had double-crossed him. So they hung him from a tree right there beside the James River. And they just threw a rope around his neck and yanked him up off the ground, and he hung there till he suffocated and died. So now they couldn't get across the James River. So they turned back north and tried to come into Richmond from the west side. And by this time, the word was out that there were federal cavalry trying to get in there, and the Home Guard and some of the Invalid Corps, the wounded soldiers that were recuperating in the hospitals around Richmond, were hustled out. They couldn't march and fight with the regular infantry, but they could at least lean up against a tree and load a rifle and fire. They were defending Richmond, and Dahlgren's raiders would run into this, and then they would bounce off and slide north and try to hit Richmond from another area, another road, and they were met again by the Home Guard or the Invalid Corps. And by this time, the word had gotten out that there was a federal cavalry attack on Richmond, and Jeb Stuart's cavalry, the real Confederate cavalry, cut loose and were running them down. And in a battle to the northwest side of Richmond, Dahlgren was killed, as most of his men were taken prisoner. And they found these orders on there ordering him to get into Richmond and kill or capture as many of the Confederate government officials as they possibly could, especially Jefferson Davis, Vice President Alexander Stevens, or anybody on the cabinet. And this was one reason why Booth thought that Lincoln needed to be assassinated as revenge or payback for his attempt to have the Confederate President Jefferson Davis murdered or assassinated. Now, that's one theory right there.
Yeah. Now, what would you say, this is like a what-if question, if he wasn't assassinated, what do you think would have happened with Lincoln if he wasn't assassinated?
Well, now, a lot of historians say that Lincoln's plan for allowing the states back into the Union and the former Confederate soldiers, that he wanted to bring them back into the Union as quickly and as easily as possible. And that's what we've been told. But Lincoln said a lot of things that he never lived up to. He said, you know, that the war was not about slavery, it's about preserving the Union. And then when it looked like that wasn't going to fly, then he had to come up with another reason to say, well, now we're going to have going on this holy cause to abolish slavery. So Lincoln was a pretty oily character. He could speak out of both sides of his mouth at the same time. It just depended on which group he was talking to. So a lot of historians have said if Lincoln hadn't been killed, then probably Reconstruction would not have been as bad as it was on the South, because that turned it over to the radicals in Congress, in the Radical Republican Party in Congress. And they wanted revenge. They wanted Robert E. Lee executed, Jefferson Davis, all the Confederate officials, just have these mass public hangings and get rid of all of them. So hard to say what would have happened had Lincoln not been assassinated. I tend to look at Lincoln's flip-flopping on a lot of issues, and he may have said that as a way to try to get these Southern armies to surrender and think, all right, if we surrender and lay down our arms and we agree not to take up arms against the United States again, which was what most of these surrender documents were that they signed or agreed to, and they did. There was very, very few guerrilla operations after the main army surrendered, and they believed that they could trust the United States government, which they later learned was a bad mistake, that, you know, maybe that they would be treated as citizens again if they did not take up arms against the United States. Would Lincoln have had any better luck than Andrew Johnson did in fighting against the radical Republicans in Congress? That we don't know. Andrew Johnson certainly didn't have any luck. In fact, he wound up being impeached. And they may have tried to impeach Lincoln if he wasn't going along with their plan for the total destruction of the Southern states. And remember,
We've got to go to a quick break, my brother. I don't know if you heard that music or not, but we got to go. We'll be right back in this, after this brief message.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
I'm Brad Bernards. Massachusetts State Police arrested 11 heavily armed individuals following an hours-long standoff that started at around 4 a.m. off an interstate highway. During a traffic stop early Saturday morning, a group of men carrying rifles and handguns, State Police Colonel Christopher Mason told Boston 25 News that the men have identified themselves as part of a group called Rise of the Moors, a group that does not recognize our laws. Mexico state-owned oil company said Friday it suffered a rupture in an undersea gas pipeline in the Gulf of Mexico.
This was the scene after an undersea gas pipeline ruptured, causing flames to bubble up from beneath the surface. That is unreal. Crews battled the blaze for hours trying to put it out. Ultimately, they did.
Audio courtesy NBC News. This is USA Radio News.
The best companion a pillow has ever had. You've heard me talking about Mike Lindell's Giza Dreams bed sheets now for a couple of years. They're the perfect companion to the MyPillow, made with the world's best cotton called Giza, grown only in a region between the Sahara Desert, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River. Its long staple cotton makes it ultra soft and breathable. And just like the MyPillow, there's a 60-day money-back guarantee, 10-year warranty. Try it for yourself. Mike Lindell and I promise you'll sleep better or you get your money back. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special, use my promo code USA. You'll get 2-for-1 pricing plus free shipping, but only by using my promo code USA. Or call 1-800-951-8175 and ask for the Giza Dream Sheets special. And the promo code USA gets you up to 66% off the entire line of MyPillow products. Sleep better with the Giza Dreams bed sheets and save at MyPillow.com. Promo code USA.
Florida officials on Saturday abruptly moved up plans to demolish the remaining part of a Miami-area condo that collapsed June 24th as the threat of a secondary collapse of the damaged structure looms, potentially endangering rescue crews. Meanwhile, officials said the death toll from the collapse increased overnight to 24 victims and 124 people remain missing. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said at a Saturday news conference the state will pay for all costs of the demolition, which he said should take place within 36 hours.
This will protect our search and rescue teams because we don't know when it could fall over. And, of course, with these gusts potentially, you know, that would create a really severe hazard. So our mission is to expedite it as soon as possible. Kevin Guthrie reports to me that once everything is ready to go, that it can be brought down within 36 hours.
This is USA Radio News.
Being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Well, people, welcome back here to Blood River Radio. My name is Eddie the Bombardier Miller. We have my wonderful co-host. I call him, I've nicknamed him, I don't know if he knows it or not, but Gene Andrews' new nickname is the Bitter Ender. I'm named after the guys in South Africa in the war, the Boer War against the British and the Zulus that would never give up. They fought to the very last drop of blood of their horses, the very last drop of their blood. So Mr. Gene, he's no longer Mr. Marine Jeans. He is the Bitter Ender because the dude ain't never gave up. Yeah, I think he told me that Lee surrendered. He didn't. But anyway, hey, and that goes for me too. We didn't surrender, did we, Gene? We still got our swords.
It's obviously the war's not over. They're still attacking us. So
absolutely.
That's why me and Gene got our still going on.
I was hoping I didn't cut you off, Gene. You know, I'm having a hell of a time here. I got this horrible sinus infection. But anyway, me and Gene both, we still got our swords, and we ain't beating them with no plowshares neither, not anytime soon. But happy what used to be Independence Day out there, people. And we also have Mr. Jim Rizzoli on, and I'm going to shut my old mouth and bring Jim Rizzoli back on. Matter of fact, Jim used to have his own TV show, and he's been in communication media for years and years and years. here before I even thought about this. So anyway, go ahead, Jim, and let us know what you got.
Well, I'm glad I could talk to Gene because I like getting into what's going on down south because we Northerners don't get a lot of this information, and so I think it's good to know. And another question I had had to do with Lincoln also, because up here Lincoln is worshipped, okay, or maybe he's worshipped everywhere. I really don't know, but I mean the way he's presented in the media up here, you know, he was the best thing that ever happened in the United States. You know, some people will say he was one of the best presidents. Now, I've read other information that said he was probably the worst president we've ever had. So what do you think about that, Gene?
Well, I would opt for the worst. I've always said that Lincoln was the one that changed the very tenet of this country and what it was founded on. We went from a constitutional republic where the states were sovereign to a socialist empire. And I cannot understand, and we mentioned this in the first hour, I cannot understand how these so-called conservative commentators like Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly when he was on, and that Mark Levin, they talk about how terrible the country's become, and then, you know, the communists and the socialists are taking over, and this country's just totally gone into the toilet, and this is bad, and it's bad, 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 bad. And then they turn around and, just like you said, Jim, they praise Lincoln like he was came down from Mount Olympus, you know, and he sits on that throne in that pagan temple on the Mall in D.C. on that throne like some Roman god, and I refer to him as Bull Crapus Maximus, the Roman god of lies and misinformation. But you know, Lincoln was the person that started this downhill spiral to change this country from a constitutional republic into a socialist empire. And why these people can't see that, it just doesn't make any sense. It's like them saying, you know, communism is a terrible, terrible ideology. Oh, it's horrible. Oh, it's communism is so bad. We just can't allow our country to go communist, and it's such a horrible thing. Oh, but that guy Karl Marx, he was a principal fellow. Oh, great guy, just a great guy. Just he led the Boy Scout troop, you know, when he was coming along. So how can they be so against the situation that this country is in, and then turn around and praise Lincoln as the person that started it? It just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I think, I had a friend of mine that said, well, if you believe that that we need an imperial presidency, then Lincoln was your boy. He was the one that started it, and others have picked it up, Roosevelt, Wilson, and Lyon Lyndon, and the Bushes, and, of course, Obama and Sleepy Joe and all these characters they've got. They picked up on that, and they just add to it every term in office. It gets worse and worse and further away from the original intent of how this country was set up. And, of course, we will never go back to a constitutional republic. That's never going to happen. So,
isn't it true that he arrested a lot of the newsmen, news people?
Yes.
He put them in jail because they would write against him?
Exactly. There were over 200 newspapers and periodicals that were shut down in the North. And he sent the soldiers in. They busted up the presses, destroyed the printings offices, and arrested the editors. There were over 30,000 people in the North that were thrown in jail without ever having a writ of habeas corpus served against them. There were no terms or no accusations ever thrown against these people, except that they were just threats, and they were accused of being Southern sympathizers. Now, they weren't out, you know, cutting telegraph lines or burning down railroad bridges or no overt acts of resistance, anything like that, like the bridge burners in East Tennessee did. They actually, Union sympathizers in East Tennessee burned the railroad bridge at Strawberry Plains up there outside of Knoxville, and they were arrested, tried, and executed for terrorism or, you know, guerrilla operations. But none of those people were ever accused of that in the North. It's just they spoke out against the war. And, of course, they're referred to as copperheads. And Governor Seymour of New York State actually wanted the state of New York to secede and leave the Union, not to join the Confederacy, but just to get out from under Lincoln.
And it never happened, but that's what kind of resistance there was to the war in some of the northern states. So you're right there. There was a lot of resistance to it, and Lincoln pretty much was a dictator, and he just declared martial law in these areas where there was resistance to the draft, mainly. First time in our history that we had a draft. They called it the Conscript Act, but it was a draft to draft people into the military. And there was resistance to that. There was resistance to Lincoln because he started that. There was resistance. A lot of people in the North felt like that, you know, the war was illegal, that he had no right to invade another part of the country. So you're absolutely right there, Jim. There was a lot of resistance to that, and he cracked down on it pretty hard to snuff out any kind of difference of opinion in the northern states.
Right. I have another question, too.
Yes, sir.
I look at the South now, you know, and I really respect the South, but I look at the South and I'm saying, you know, especially with all the, you know, so-called Christian people down there, why aren't they doing more to speak out against things? They seem like they're just sitting there and letting things happen. And I don't know, what do they think? They're going to pray and God's going to deliver them from evil here? I mean, not many people. I mean, Eddie's got a show and he's trying to do something here. And most people are just sitting down there. They're doing up here the same thing. I'm not saying the North is any better. But, I mean, I think the South is more Christian than the North. And yet you would think there would be more in an effort of people of faith, gathering and doing something about it, you know?
Well, Jim, unfortunately, it's what is known as propaganda. And I think Dr. Goebbels said, you tell a lie once and it's a lie, but you tell a lie 1,000 times and it becomes the truth. And I think so many people in the South have been brainwashed that we have been taught for generations and generations from history books that promote the Lincoln myth, that promote the, you know, bigger is always better, you know, we can't go against this national government, that we are so much better off now than we were, you know, in the 1860s and things like that. So I think a lot of the people in the South have actually been brainwashed. And a lot of our politicians, we do not have the politicians like we had in the South from Thomas Jefferson and John C. Calhoun or Jefferson Davis or John Randolph of Roanoke or any of those people or George Mason. We just do not have those politicians anymore. We've got this slick Willie Lee that's governor of Tennessee that campaigned as a conservative, and then he wasn't in office, 6 weeks, and he started crawfishing and backing up. And we even asked him while he was campaigning, would you protect our Southern history and heritage and our Confederate monuments? Oh, yes. The monuments need to stay there, and he'll do that. Well, he gets elected, and then he bails out on us, and the first thing he wants to do is remove the Forrest statue from the state capitol in Nashville. So, you know, where are leaders that are going to stand up to this communist onslaught or this terrorist? And the churches are not any better. The individuals may be Christian, but that's why I left the Baptist Church. The Southern Baptist Convention met, and they passed all these resolutions against the Confederate flag and against the Southern history and Southern heritage and the monuments. And they've sided with Antifa, and they've sided with the Black Lives Matter. And, you know, that's what's going on, and I don't know how to... I'm like you. I don't know how to stop the tide that's sweeping over us.
Gene, y'all, Jim, we got to go to our last break. And by the way, Rich tuned in and said that Goebbels was referring to the Jewish press. People, we'll be right back to our last segment. We're having a ball. Be right back now.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, if there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people, unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
I'm Michael Hill, President of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern Nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
People, welcome back to our last segment. I'm going to slow the ranks down just for a minute, make a couple of comments. You know, they're talking about the loss of states' rights. They were, and it's so true. We had our sixth Chief Justice, Samuel Chase. I think he died in 1873. He once said that, yes, states' rights, that James was right. States' rights died at Appomattox. That's what he said. We haven't had states' rights since then, and we won't have it again until we rise up and finish what we lost in 1865. And Jim hit on one of my sore points. I'm to the point almost where I just despise what's become of the church, really in the world, especially in the United States and especially in the South. He asked, why do the churches stand up and do something? Well, they have. They stood up, but they take the opposite side. They are against us. Our churches have become our greatest enemy of white Southern Christians, actually the greatest enemy of Christianity worldwide. The current Judeo-Christian church, as it stands, is not a Christian church. It's a cabal. It's what the Revelations refer to as that woman dressed in purple and gold. She's riding the beast. She's drunk on the blood of the saints. It's the whore of Babylon. The church has become the whore of Babylon. And all you got to do is look what they're preaching. They're preaching this Judeo-Christian crap that you got to worship Israel. You got to worship the Jews in order to get into heaven. And that is the devil's lie. Anybody that's got an IQ of 80 or 90 that can read the King James Bible, you can destroy that lie in a heartbeat. Anybody that denies that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, he is the Antichrist spirit. The Apostle Paul spoke about that. St. John spoke about that. So yes, I'm going to shut up. But yes, the church is no longer the church. The church in the South and pretty much nationwide has become the synagogue of Satan. Anytime you hear somebody talk about the Judeo-Christian church, then that's like saying someone is a virgin whore. It's the same thing. And I'll say I'd rather be caught pimping out for a New Orleans whorehouse than be caught in a Southern Baptist church or being a pastor in a Southern Baptist church where they're nothing but whores of Satan and whores of the Jews, the Judeo-Christian complex, and they're our chief enemy. And I kind of lost what I was going to mention next. But anyway, back to you, Jim. I knew you had some more questions.
Okay. Well, I mean, I know I asked Gene about that Christian identity because that's a far-right movement of the Christian movement. And so in other words, it's just the opposite of what you're talking about. I mean, they kind of go in regards to race being the biggest thing, how God accepts people for your color of your skin, which I really don't agree with. I think it's a matter of how people act and how people live.
Character of the individual.
Right. I mean, that's my belief. But these people.
Let me chip in one more second, Jim. I'll say If you'll go to Galatians 5, and there's many, excuse me, Galatians 3, and I'll make this quick. It sums it up. It says, the Apostle Paul in his letter to the Galatians says that, and I'll paraphrase it, if you be baptized in Christ, there is no Greek, no Gentile, no male, no female, no bondman, no strong, no strong, no bondman, no freedman. He saw no slave master, no bondman. Okay, then the very last verse of the third chapter of Galatians says that, and if you be baptized in Christ, but this is a paraphrase, but you can check me out. If you be baptized in Christ, the same, I have emphasis added, is the seed of Abraham and an heir to the promise. It's the Spirit. If you believe in your heart and confess with your lips that Jesus Christ is Lord, that he is the Son of God, then ye shall be saved. That's the truth. And it's not damn blood, and I like to point this out. I think all them people that come out of Egypt that Moses led out of there, all several million of them, they bees of the son of Abraham. They were Jews, right? But guess what God did? God killed every stinking one of them and wandering in the wilderness for years and years and years. And they were sons of Abraham, but he killed the hell out of them, and rightfully so. So much for your bloodline. But anyway, back to you, Jim.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Spirit, that's the gospel of Eddie Miller.
Yeah, I agree. I understand what you're saying. But it is a fight between these folks. I mean, I just find it interesting because they have a viewpoint about the Israelites being white, which I don't agree with them. But I think anybody can accept Christ, and it's their heart condition, and not the color. That's how I feel about it.
Well, that's right. You know, all you do is ask the centurion that said, Lord, if you would just come into my, if you would just bless my, he said, my servant is sick. If you would just pray for him, bless him, he'll be healed. And Jesus said, oh, I'll come see your servant right now. He said something like, I'm not worthy to receive you into my house. If you will just say the word, my servant shall be healed. And Jesus said he had never seen such faith amongst the Israelites. You know, and that's we could do a 2 or 4 hour show on this, but I'm going to shut up, so I'm not going to take up any more of your time. So go back to you now, Jim, and continue on with Gene.
Okay.
Well, yeah, Jim is right. We've lost a lot of our Christian identity in the South. And yeah, just to give one example, there were so many chaplains that went with the boys into the Confederate Army. And on the battlefield at Franklin, they were getting ready to make that assault across 2 miles of open ground into federal earthworks. And a lot of the soldiers were given their watches or the last letters or things like that to the chaplains because these were veterans of 4 years of war. They knew that this was a suicide mission. Most of them weren't coming back. And so they were giving all these things to the chaplains, and the chaplains are going, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. We're going with you. And they were in there, and the chaplains were killed just like the regular infantry soldiers. In fact, and I can't remember the name, Thomas Cartwright, such a great historian, he could give you the name of this chaplain. He was walking backwards out in front of the line of infantry that was making this advance across those open fields going into the attack at Franklin. He was walking backwards and preaching to the boys as they were coming forward in the assault. So that's the type of ministers and church people we had in the 1800s, and there are darn few of those left around today. So they all want to compromise. Well, we got to do this. We don't have to do this or that. And a thing I like to point out to them, Jesus didn't back down. He was the Romans darn near beat him to death before they crucified him. And when they were beating the living daylights out of him, he didn't say, well, I'm not the way, the truth, and the light, and you can get to the Father anyway. You don't have to come through me. Let's all be together, and can't we all get along? And you can worship Baal or Pharaoh or Zeus or anything. You know, we don't want to offend anybody. So he didn't go that route. But too many of our ministers and our political leaders today are going that route, that they don't want to offend anybody. They don't want to make a stand. And so that's why we're in a lot of the messes that we're in today. So,
you know, Gene, if the whore of Jericho can get saved, the whore of Jericho, and I know Gene knows who I'm talking about. He's a Bible scholar who say, you know, she hid the spies. I think what was his name? Oh, not Jacob. Anyway, she hid the Israeli spies. And so she, when the Israelis attacked Jericho after 3 days march around, blew the trumpet 7 times, etc., she was saved. She married, the whore of Babylon, Rahab, married a Jew by the name of Salmon. Okay, well, Salmon and Rahab had Boaz. Boaz and his wife had a son named Jesse. Jesse had David, King David, probably the greatest Jew that ever lived. So that see, King David had a whore and a Gentile in his bloodline. So, you know, they weren't full-blooded Israeli or full-blooded Jew even those days. And I think Ruth was a Gentile, Gene, but I'm not sure. But anyway, I'm sorry to keep interrupting y'all. Go ahead,
no,
Gene.
I'll turn it back over to Jim. It's a good question to bring up.
Yep. I do have one last question because I know time's short here. How many people do you think died during this quote civil war? Because I get different figures here and there. You know, some high, some not as high. What do you think?
Well, they revised it upwards a lot since they first came out. We were always taught there were about 280 to 290,000 Southern soldiers that were killed, and then probably another 5,000 to 10,000 civilians that were just murdered because the Federal Army could do it. They just, you know, picked people out and shot them down on the side of the road and whatever they wanted to do. And then probably in the Federal Army, somewhere around 380 to 390,000 soldiers died during the war. So, I don't know how accurate that is now. I know that's been revised upward from that, but, you know, and the devastating thing was, it like most wars, it took the young men out of the population, the young white men out of the population. And right. There were towns in the South where the entire male population that went off to war never came back. They don't do that anymore. They split people up in the military. You serve with people from New Jersey and Oregon and Florida and all over. But back then, you were recruited, and your whole town went off as Company A of the 11th Mississippi Infantry or whatever. And if that unit went into a horrible fight and took a lot of casualties, then most of the young men between 17 and 30 or 40 were just wiped out from that town. So that was one of the really devastating things that happened to so many of the small villages and towns in the South, to lose their male population in the war. And the ones that came back, a lot of them were so crippled and from amputations of wounds and so forth. And they didn't call it post-traumatic stress syndrome back then, but a lot of the boys that came back certainly had that. And a lot of right. the things that happened to them after the war were a result of that.
And just think, 50 years later, we have another one that killed 100,000 whites, you know, World
yes.
War One.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, when you look at the situation here, what do we
100,000 Americans, millions of
white,
Germans and French.
Yeah. World War One wiped out so much of the white male population of Europe. It was just suicidal. And then,
yeah.
you know, 40 years later, whatever it was, it bang, here we go again. So,
yeah.
You know, guys, I tell people, too, we all lost. Some of the Yankees will say, well, we won. No, the hell you didn't. You lost. We lost. Every white person in the United States of America lost that war.
Yeah.
We were dead. We were,
right.
Now we have,
right.
like Gene said, we have a communist dictatorship to show for it. Back to you,
yeah.
Jim.
Right. Well, no, that's my point. It's like, If you ever notice all these wars, all the whites are losing. They're all dying. And you know, the Jews and everybody else, you know, make out just fine. But all the whites are the ones dying, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Gene, tell what Mr. Buddy said about people participating in war.
Oh, yeah. But Mr. Buddy sent me this quote, and I've got it taped right here on my desk. It says, "Those who profit from war will never suffer and die in it, and those who suffer and die in war will never profit from it." And boy, if that's not
yeah.
the truth.
Yeah, you're not
sure.
Yeah. Sad. It's just sad to see
well,
that happen.
I'll give an example.
People run out of time.
Need to close it out there, Eddie.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, people, for tuning in. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Mr. Buddy. Thank you, Jay and Cameron. God bless you, audience. I hope we've done you well. I hope we didn't piss anybody off tonight. I hope we did a good job. I hope we did the work of Christ. Pray for us. Pray that the Blood River Radio continues to do the work of Jesus Christ, of our Almighty God. And God willing, we'll see you same time next week, July the 10th. Be right back. We'll have, anyway, I'll tell you who's on next week. Bye-bye. Good night, everybody.